Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Impact Michigan podcast, presented by Intermittent. Intermittent is a grassroots, volunteer-operated organization that was founded in 2016. Their mission is to unite the Midwest tech community, thoughtfully nurture its development, and highlight it as a hub of and destination for entrepreneurial talent and innovation. Today's guest is none other than James Chapman, an entrepreneur in residence at the Quicken Loans Community Investment Fund. We got the chance to chat about hustle versus fake hustle, how his experience playing basketball impacted his career, and what he loves about Detroit. All right, with that, let's get into the episode. Welcome, James.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm good. Good. How are you, Jay?
Good. Doing well. Doing super well. Yeah, so first, I want to thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to have you.
Yeah.
And I typically just allow my guests to take the reins from the get. And just tell us, what's your story? Who is James Chapman?
Yeah. So, originally from Chattanooga, Tennessee. I've been living in Detroit. It'll be 2 years in April, so almost 2 years now. And it's been a really exciting journey for me getting here. Grew up in Chattanooga, born and raised. Went to Chattanooga Schools for the Arts and Sciences through high school. Didn't actually get a basketball scholarship. I've been playing basketball since I was three at Bluefield College, where I majored in marketing and communications while playing ball at the same time. After I graduated from school, I actually continued to play ball a little bit. I played down in Mexico and in the NBA Development League. I made it to training camp and then got cut, and then decided to go back home to Chattanooga to kind of just figure out life. Started working in workforce development, probably worked in workforce for 4 to 5 years or so. And then I had an idea for business. So once I got the funding for that business, I quit my job cold turkey. It was an oil change delivery service, which was my first business. So we would subcontract out with mobile mechanics to go on site and do oil changes for people. And then once I got the funding for that and start running the business, actually a lot of people started reaching out to me in Chattanooga asking me for assistance with their business and that kind of stuff, which was really cool. And I started to figure out that I was really passionate about helping other entrepreneurs. So to do that, I started opening up co-working spaces in between the hours of 6 p.m. and midnight, because most of the folks that were reaching out to me worked a 9-to-5 job. And so just wanted them to have a space to collaborate, share ideas. I was always working anyway. I was working at nighttime a lot, so were they. And so that's when I really started to fall in love with co-working and fall in love with assisting other entrepreneurs. Started doing some entrepreneur residency work, contract consulting, trainings, and that kind of stuff all around, helping people go from idea to action. And then had a very unique opportunity to move to Michigan, up into Detroit, to work with a family of companies post their Business Accelerator that they were running. Ended up taking over the work there from them and figuring out how we can best serve entrepreneurs in Detroit and helping them being able to take their ideas and their existing businesses to the next level.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, post the Business Accelerator, what really brought you to Detroit from Chattanooga? Because I know it's pretty close to home for you.
Yeah. So I think the thing that sold me the most on coming to Detroit and picking up the work post Bizdom was the grittiness of the entrepreneurs that are here. I could really relate to that. I flew up for a few times to do a handful of visits and that kind of stuff to really just get to know the entrepreneurs that were here and figuring out, you know, what their needs were and that kind of stuff. And then once I realized that this was a town with people who looked like me, who from situations similar to where I'm from, but just really had that ambition to be able to get their wrenches off the ground when needed the opportunities. That's kind of what sold me on being able to make that transition and figure that, you know, Detroit could be a place that I could come home.
Yeah, so for the folks listening, wherever.
Yeah.
Can you explain real quick, if they don't know what BizDom is, what BizDom was, and,
yeah.
and now how it rolled into what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. So BizDom was an incubator accelerator where entrepreneurs would pitch ideas that they had for tech startups, and they would get funding, I believe, in the range of $25,000 or so in exchange for 7-8% equity in their companies. And then they would get follow-on investments if they needed that follow-on investments. And so, you know, BizDom was great. It stirred up a lot of energy. It got resources in the hands of people who needed it. And we, you know, really trying to leverage the tech talent that we had and that kind of stuff. But we just realized that there was a broader focus that we could tap into. And that was, you know, just entrepreneurs from all sorts of industries, not just tech. So whether you're brick and mortar, retail, lifestyle, neighborhood business, or you're a technology business, we want to figure out how we can add resources that will be able to help those entrepreneurs. And so now what that work looks like is start, grow, and scale. So if you just have an idea, we partner with business planning programs to get you through a program that will help you test your assumptions for your idea, to help you be able to get it off the ground and go about your idea in a smarter way. We're trying to leverage our procurement spend as much as we possibly can for Detroit-based companies. And then to help entrepreneurs scale, we're looking at what we call Detroit Demo Day, where we commit $1 million in funding for companies to be able to pitch their idea. Not their idea, I'm sorry, it has to be an existing business. Pitch their business on stage for a chance to receive anywhere between $50,000 and $200,000 in funding for their venture.
Wow. Yeah. And so going back to your time in Chattanooga,
yep.
What was your goal with Workaholics and what did you see it provide to the community? I know you already spoke
yep.
about this, but
yep.
maybe elaborate.
Yeah,
a little
for bit. Sure. I think Workaholics is very unique because, you know, a lot of the services that are provided for entrepreneurs happen during the day. Well, what about those budding entrepreneurs that got to work, you know, during the daytime, and they can't really tap into a lot of the resources that are available? And I was just seeing that a lot, and just knowing how much that I was working at night and seeing the fact that I could only meet with those people at night, I just really put it out on Facebook and said, hey, if I started opening up a workspace, you know, between the hours of 6 p.m. and midnight, you know, who would show up, who would come and work? And the response was overwhelming. And so I just realized that it was a real need. And then once I started opening up the space, I started to see happen what I call uncommon collisions. And what that means is, you know, somebody from a different neighborhood, somebody from a different background or ethnicity or whatever the case may be, collaborating and sharing ideas with people that they wouldn't normally run into in an everyday setting, just because it's you know, I have a very diverse following of people and diverse, you know, friends and that kind of stuff. And so the initial group that I was inviting was my was in my reach, and so that's kind of how that authentic diversity really just started, and then that ended up being the best part about, you know, Workaholics as it continued to grow, was that, you know, you've got people who are from different backgrounds who have never run into each other now being able to collaborate and share ideas and help those ideas prosper. Because really, I believe that the best source of capital is human capital. And so if we can leverage human capital and allow people to pour into each other and be able to strengthen each other, then, you know, there's no telling what can happen from there.
Yeah. So do you think it was just purely, at least to begin with, your diverse network that you brought in with Workaholics
yeah.
and kind of cultivated that sort of, you mentioned, uncommon collision?
Yeah.
Do you think it was just purely that aspect, or do you think maybe there's other ways you can sort of replicate that?
Yeah, I mean, there's other ways to replicate it for sure. I think when you're talking about diversity and you're talking about, you know, how to bring people from diverse backgrounds together, you got to be able to find a champion that can represent and speak to those particular communities. And so if you can find that, then that's always going to be good for, you know, the best way to spread news is word of mouth, really. And so, you know, start there. And then when it comes to how you get the message out and the marketing and the outreach and that kind of stuff, you got to be willing to be uncomfortable and maybe go to some neighborhoods or some places that you may not have normally been to, be able to speak to people who you may not normally interact with and that kind of stuff. So really, it's all about just challenging yourself. Fortunately, it was easier for me just because, you know, I grew up a certain type of way. And then as I advanced more as a professional, I started, you know, interacting with a different crowd and that kind of stuff. And so I can speak a few languages, so to speak. But I think that there is definitely a way to replicate that, but it starts with intentionality.
Yeah, for sure. And is there anything like, maybe not specifically workaholics, but in general that accomplishes that goal of cultivating uncommon collisions? Is there anything like that you see in Detroit?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I would say who does a really good job at that? Grant Circus, I think, does a really good job at that. You know, I'm a fan of the work that's happening down at Grand Circus, where they're trying to teach people to code and things of that nature. As we all know, we live in a digital age. And if you aren't involved with technology or familiar with technology and can use it, leverage it, you're not going to have the upper hand as it comes to opportunities that are happening, and that will continue to happen going forward. And so, you know, as I spend more time with the folks over at Grand Circus and just kind of watch the work that they're doing, I see a lot of uncommon collisions happening in that particular space. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know you mentioned this before, but talk more, I guess, in depth about what specifically you do with Rock Ventures, your team, Jamie, et cetera.
Yeah. So my team is under the actual Quicken Loans Community Investment Fund. And so, you know, the biggest thing that I do with Jamie is probably Detroit Demo Day, which is our way of being able to get capital in the hands of entrepreneurs through a competition. Entrepreneurs that go online, they submit their application, applications are vetted, they make it to the actual day, and then they pitch on stage for their share of revenue, their share of funding. And I think, you know, what's really unique about our demo day as opposed to, you know, some other demo days that may happen around the country is that it's industry agnostic, right? And so you talk about uncommon collisions, you know, even in this work that we're doing, you may have somebody who has a bakery sharing the same stage with somebody who owns a barbershop, sharing the same stage with somebody who has an online technology e-commerce company or whatever the case may be. And so, you know, there's a lot of uncommon collisions that are also happening with Demo Day, and I think that that's what makes the work really exciting for people from all different backgrounds to be able to, you know, participate in the competition, people to be able to attend the competition that is very diverse and inclusive.
Yeah, and so talking more and going back to your time with Chattanooga, you know, in my research with you, research of you, you worked with Causeway.
Yeah.
And, you know, something that, so I became familiar with Causeway through their One Table effort.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. And I thought that was really, really interesting. I thought it was really cool that, so for the folks that don't know, One Table is essentially, you know, around Thanksgiving time.
Yeah.
It's just this huge table. They block off, I don't know how many miles, or maybe a mile.
It's like a block. Yeah. It may be two blocks now. I think a block or two
around there of just, you know, a table for Thanksgiving where anybody in the community, like regardless of race, religion, whatever, like it's just the table that's there and you can sit there. And what I was thinking was, wow, like, I mean, if you can get the marketing right and get it to be, you know, and actually get the different diverse people to sit there, you could literally have, you know, the CEO of a tech startup sitting right next to a person who's like homeless or something, you know? And I think those connections are really important to actually build community, you know, because there's a lot of different community building efforts that I think, you know, maybe not is their intent, but is siloed, you know, is in sort of a quote unquote bubble. But yeah, talk a bit about your involvement with Causeway. Yeah. What is Causeway?
Yeah, for sure. So Causeway is a social incubator. They do tremendous work. I was entrepreneur in residence for Causeway for a year or two. And I actually mentioned them in my TEDx talk that I gave a few years back, and I mentioned the One Table initiative specifically. You know, that talk that I gave was called Creating the Culture of Selflessness, and you know, being able to pick up other people and that sort of thing. And so the reason why I mention it is because, you know, obviously, as you just alluded to, you know, the One Table initiative is all of that, right? It's all about being able to create, again, those uncommon collisions, but helping each other. So, you know, you block off a street. You know, I think we blocked off MLK in between. I forget the streets that it was in between, but that doesn't matter. But essentially what you do is it's a potluck. And so you invite people to bring, you know, their dish and that kind of stuff. You do it around Thanksgiving time. And then you just invite everybody from lunch. And then the unique thing about the location is that on one side of MLK is like the business district, and a lot of, you know, white collar professionals will come and sit outside and, you know, eat their lunch and that kind of stuff. But then on the other side of the street is a park where usually is known for a lot of homeless individuals and individuals that's just been not as fortunate, kind of hanging out and that kind of stuff. And so we put the table right down the middle and just invited everybody to come, and, you know, some really raw and real conversations, but really just a lot of times people getting to know each other, and it changed your perspective on people, and it allows you to humanize a lot of things that you know, you may not normally think about to be so human sometimes. And so I think that was the thing that I appreciated the most. And Causeway is great for just being able to, you know, One Table was just one of the initiatives that they host, but they're all about trying to find social ideas and take those ideas into action and empowering people to do that. So
yeah, how do you think we can replicate what that accomplishes for the city of Detroit?
Yeah, you know, One Table would be great. I think if somebody were to do an initiative like a One Table, that would be something that's fun. I don't know if that's been talked. I feel like that's maybe been talked about before with another organization. I'm not familiar with which organization, but, you know, anything really, doesn't matter if you're eating. It doesn't matter if it's a workaholic, like you're working. It doesn't matter. Like, anytime you can take something that, you know, people have to do, right? And then be able to be intentional about who you invite to the table to be able to do those things, great things are going to happen. It just takes somebody to be able to lead the charge on that and be able to make sure and curate, you know, what that looks like. But there's, you know, you can do it around work, you can do it around food, you can do it around play. You know, you can create some type of atmosphere where people from diverse backgrounds get to play together and that kind of thing. And so there's a lot of different ways that it can be done, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. And so you mentioned your TED Talk,
yeah.
Creating a Culture of Selflessness.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, you kind of talk about your old basketball coach.
Yeah,
and,
Gillespie.
Yeah. And so talk a little bit about, maybe just give a minute long summary of your TEDx talk. But
yeah.
I also really want to dig deep into, you know, how just sports in general, and how especially a mentor like your old coach,
yeah,
like impacted you.
Yeah. So my TEDx, Creating a Culture of Selflessness, was all about, you know, picking other people up and adopting the mindset that if you do for others, you know, it'll come back around and we're stronger and better together. And, you know, if you strengthen the weakest link, then, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to do is going to be as strong as you possibly can make it. And there's details around that, but, you know, just go to YouTube and check it out for anybody who's watching or listening. Just create a culture of selflessness. So, you know, getting into Gillespie, you know, he was really influential because, you know, he met me at a very young age. You know, I was 17 when Gillespie met me, and still figuring out, you know, how to become a man. And so when you have somebody who is coaching you, and, you know, so a game I've been playing since 3 years old, and, you know, at 17 now, college is the highest level that I have been at, and I'm also learning how to become a man and that kind of thing, that's a really important time. You know, a lot of things that he instilled in me, you know, even off of the court, was, you know, staying out of trouble, making sure I make good grades, making sure I treat people with respect, you know, how to go about my business and carry myself and that kind of stuff. Always, you know, instilling in me that there's a life outside of basketball, because it's hard to, you know, when you're in college and that's all you know is class and ball, you know, you kind of get sucked into that a little bit. And so he was always, you know, really, really trying to dig in and hone in on the fact that there's life outside of basketball and being prepared for that life. So that was a really important piece. And, you know, sports can teach you so much about life. You know, it teaches you about teamwork. It teaches you about work ethic. It teaches you about, you know, working independently, but then how that independent work that you put in, you know, can carry over to making your entire team better and things of that nature. And so, you know, that is something that I really appreciated. But he more than any coach I've ever had, just preached the fact that, you know, we're better together. And it doesn't matter how great one individual is on this team. If we don't get it done together and if we don't help each other, then we're not going to be the best team that we can be. And so I bought into that. And, you know, shout out to Gillespie for always instilling those messages into our team.
Yeah. Yeah. So specifically with basketball, I mean, this is very similar with a lot of different sports, but in basketball, you hear the word hustle a lot, right? Like hustle to the ball,
that's right.
Hustle to the line if
that's
you're running
right.
gassers, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right.
So talk a bit about what the word hustle means to you.
Yeah. So hustle to me, it is that. It is the actual effort, right? It's the effort that you put in. And, you know, it's this whole notion that if you put in the effort, good things are going to happen. And if you don't put in the effort, then you're going to be mediocre, right? And so, you know, I adapted the kind of this hustle thing very early on, definitely from sports. I do consider myself to be a hustler, and, you know, it relates to entrepreneurship, but it relates to sports and it relates to life. And, you know, when I talk about, you know, hustle and entrepreneurship, I always talk about it being the great equalizer, right? It doesn't matter if you're from the projects, it doesn't matter if you're from the trailer park, wherever you're from. If you apply hustle to your life, you can literally leverage the playing field for your situation. There's so many resources that are out there, especially in the U.S., that if you go after it and you know, find a way, you know, something good is going to happen. Now, I don't know exactly what, and I'm not saying you're going to be a millionaire or billionaire, but, you know, if you hustle, you'll improve your situation. And even in sports, right, if you're not the most talented player on the floor, but you're working the hardest and you're hustling for those loose balls and you're hustling for the rebounds and you're hustling back on defense, you're going to be able to impact the game in a positive way. You're going to put your team in a position to win. And those things don't take great talent. You know, those things just take training yourself to put forth that effort. And so, you know, that's something that I live by. I never claim to be the smartest in the room or the most talented at things that I do, but it's going to take somebody a really difficult time to outwork me, because that's the one thing that I feel like I can control. And so I'm going to hustle as hard as I can to be able to put myself in a position to be the best that I could possibly be. And so I live by the hustle.
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest, you know, thing I take from that is just what you say, hustle is the greatest equalizer.
Yeah.
And I think that's really true. You know, regardless of somebody's situation, you know, like, what else can you do?
That's
you
right.
know, you know
that's
what I mean?
Right.
Like anything that's in your control,
yeah,
right, is the work you put in.
That's right.
Right. And whatever situation you were born in, you are in right now, mm-hmm. a situation you got yourself into, like, regardless of what it is, the only thing you have in your control is really your, like, what you put in.
That's right.
Right? Like, what you do after that, your response to that.
Yeah.
And so I do want to talk about, you know, there's a lot of hustle that goes into entrepreneurship.
For
but
sure.
At the same time, and you talked about this in one of your like, talk show episodes.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of fake hustle that goes on.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what distinguishes the real hustlers from the fake ones?
Yeah, this hustle thing has become a thing that, you know, everybody's bought into from on social media, you know, especially on social media. Everybody wants to say that they're hustling. Everybody wants to say that they're working hard. And everybody wants to, not everybody, a lot of people are wanting to make it look like their life is something that it isn't. You know, I believe in just being authentic. You know, show us how gritty your life is. You know, show us you know, what it's like, you know, you staying up late at night working on the things that you're working on. Show it to us before it happens. You know, that's going to make me more of a fan than you trying to fake it and that kind of stuff. And so I think that if you are, you know, it's not always easy to tell who's hustling, who's not. Now, I kind of leave that up to them. But, you know, to speak to somebody who kind of is fake hustling, if you're just spinning your wheels and not going anywhere, and if you're doing it for show, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons. You got to be hustling when nobody's looking, and you got to be actually putting forth practical steps to get from one place to another. It can't just be I'm working just to say I'm working or working for the sake of working. No, it has to be taking you somewhere. You have to have a goal in mind, and then you hustle to reach that goal. That's what hustling is. If you're not hustling to reach a goal, then it's fake hustle. It's for show. It's for what is it for? It's not to reach an actual goal. And so, you know, do your thing. I mean, get your followers up, you know, get your likes up if that's what you're doing it for. It's not what I would recommend, because that shit is gonna, you know, that stuff will eventually fade and fail. But you know, I think the biggest differentiator between somebody who's fake hustling is not as the goal that's in mind. And if you're hustling towards a goal, or if you're hustling just to say that you're hustling, or working just to say that you're doing something.
Today's partner highlight is none other than New Foundry. New Foundry is an Ann Arbor-based innovation studio working with leaders and change makers from startups to multinational corporations, from health systems to automotive suppliers, from financial services to consumer products, and beyond. New Foundry designs and develops custom solutions for the digital world. Mobile and web apps that engage and delight, user interfaces that make driving and riding more fun, product configurators that sell more stuff. If it's digital, they do it. Contact New Foundry today to find out what their team of designers, software engineers, and product strategists can do for you. That's New Foundry, spelled NEWFOUNDRY, at newfoundry.com. New Foundry, let's forge your big idea. Yeah, so what's a piece of advice you would give to young hustlers? Maybe, you know, those middle school kids, high school kids that are like going out, waiting in line, buying, reselling sneakers, stuff like that. All you know, that. Like that's like real hustling, you know what I mean? You know, somebody I'm a big fan of is Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah.
And he talks a little bit about how when he was younger, he used to buy and flip and even sell baseball cards.
Yeah.
Right? And that those are some of the earliest hustles. So talk a little bit about, you know, I'm sure you're a mentor to a lot of these young kids, but talk a bit about what are some pieces of advice you would give to the young hustlers?
You know, when you're young and you're hustling and you're doing it just to make money, or you're doing it just to figure things out, or doing it to make ends meet and that kind of stuff, you can't go wrong. There's no wrong way to go about it. You know, but definitely do it, because what'll happen is it allows you, you know, to not be distracted by things. It allows you to figure out what it is that you're really passionate about and that you can fall in love with and things of that nature. And then at some point, you're going to be able to pick up on some really practical business tools and tips and that kind of stuff that's going to allow you to hone that hustle and turn it into an actual venture. And so, you know, there's no wrong way to go about it. If you're young and you're hustling, or even if you're older and you're hustling, you know, and you're just trying to figure it out, that's fine. You know, I think statistically, it shows that it's never your first venture that is the one that ends up, you know, being the most successful or making you the millions of dollars or whatever it is. I think it's usually like your second or third venture or something like that. And so, you know, if you're at this thing for the first time and you're really just, you've got a passion project or something like that, go at it with full speed. You know, do it to the best that you can possibly do it. And don't be afraid to make mistakes, because the mistakes that you're making while you're hustling are going to allow you to be able to not make those mistakes later on when you do figure out that one thing that's going to be able to you know, support you for the rest of your life. And so the biggest thing that I would say is there's no wrong way to do it, and you know, do it early, do it often. But don't be afraid to make mistakes.
Yeah, for sure. And on a similar note, for the college students and high school students, or, you know, a bit older even, in general, for the people that don't necessarily know what they want to be, but are kind of interested in entrepreneurship and maybe just need that little extra nudge, you know, for the people that are still kind of, you know, quote unquote lost in life, what's a piece of advice you would have?
Solve your own problem. Figure out, you know, what it is that you wish existed and then start there. You know, there's these certain things that we get passionate about, that we realize that are flawed. And if we can, you know, fix those flaws and whatever the case may be, then I think that that's a really good starting point for someone. You know, I was hustling in school. Like when I was in middle school, I would sell my toys when I got done playing with them just because I wanted some extra cash. Or I would sell shoes in college. I would order the shoes online. And you know, I went to a really rural kind of a school in a very rural community, and so there wasn't a big Foot Action or Foot Locker, any of that type of stuff. And you know, I would order shoes online, and they would come to me, and I would resell them. And so, you know, I was doing it just for extra cash. But if you're really just trying to get into entrepreneurship and trying to figure out which path to take, start thinking about what are the problems that you have in your life, and figuring out if you're the one to solve your own problem. That's how I came up with the oil change business. I just hated going to get my oil change, man. And so I was like, all right, this is a problem that I have. I'm going to figure out if I can solve it. It's not ultimately what I want to be doing for the rest of my life, but it introduced me to solid entrepreneurship that's opened the door for me for other things.
Yeah, for sure. And so what are some general words of motivation for the listeners?
Believe in yourself, really. And that one is what's the word for it? It's something that's said often. It's cliche. All the time. It's kind of cliche, yeah. Right? But what I'm talking about believing in yourself is there's so much negative energy that's out there. And that negative energy is the thing that I believe stalls people or slows them down and prevents people from really achieving what they can be good at. And it sucks when the negative energy comes from friends and loved ones. But man, if you can get in a really positive headspace, I mean, just a place of true optimism where you may even blindly believe in what you're doing, right? There's nothing wrong with that. And so that's what I would tell people is to stay as positive as you possibly can. And if you've got anybody who's inserting any kind of negative energy, you know, in your circle, whether it's directly or indirectly, you know, sometimes people say little passive aggressive, you know, comments and things of that nature about what it is that you're doing or you or other, get that away from you. Get it far, far, far away from you, because you're not going to be able to be successful at this type of stuff with negative energy around you. So you've got to keep it positive, man. You've got to keep a really positive mindset. You know, as I mature in this stuff, I realized that, you know, a lot of it is about the work that you put in and just the hard work, but the mental piece of it and the psychological and emotional piece of it is just as important. And if I'm not in a good headspace, it doesn't matter how hard I'm trying to work. It's not going to get me anywhere. So you got to keep your headspace strong, and you got to get the negative vibes away from you.
Yeah, for sure. And so other than Coach, is it Gillespie?
Gillespie.
Coach G. Who are some role models that you've had in life?
My mom, for one. You know, my mom instilled a lot of just, you know, a lot of knowledge around how the world works. You know, we didn't have it easy coming up at all. We've dealt with a lot of things in our life that we wish that we didn't have to deal with, but we realized that they made us stronger. You know, you play the hand that you're dealt. And so I appreciate her as I'm growing up to allow me to always realize that this world's not fair. You're going to get dealt a bad hand sometimes. But you play that hand regardless, and you don't make excuses, and you don't blame other people, and you figure it out, and you pray about it, and then good things are going to happen. But I think that she's the primary reason why you'll never really hear me making excuses. You'll never really hear me complaining much. And that's just because of how I grew up, and she instilled those things in me. So I would definitely give a lot of credit to my mom, is because now when problems do arise, and a lot of them are gonna arise in business, my first reaction is always solving it. Never blaming people, never being super emotional about or upset that it's, or this kind of woe is me kind of a situation. That's not how I come up, and now that is really, really helping me be able to react to things faster and be more productive. So I would give props to her in a lot of ways. Another person I would say, there's a guy back home. His name is Gerald. He used to work at the Boys and Girls Club that I went to, and the rec centers and that kind of stuff that I would go to. He was really, really positive in my life. And you talk about people who just, who believe in you, that just pour positive energy into you. So I talked about the negative energy piece and getting those people away from you. There's certain people who are just encouragers and who just believe in you and who are always, you know, throwing positivity your way and make you feel like you're a superhero or something like that. I appreciate him for that. You know, it wasn't much about what he said. It's just that he was always super positive and always letting me know that I could do anything that I put my mindset to, and, you know, just believing in me and just always pouring a lot of positive energy into me. And so, you know, shout out to him for that too.
Yeah. And I've been meaning to ask this just because for my own curiosity, yep. But, I recently got a tattoo.
Yeah.
You have multiple.
Yeah. I got a lot of tattoos.
Like, I mean, what motivated you to get them? Like, yeah. What do some of them mean?
Yeah. Basketball culture, I think, really motivated me to get tattoos. It's just kind of a thing. We want, you know, when we're wearing our jerseys, we want tattoos because they look cool. And so that's kind of really, if I'm honest, that's when I started getting tattoos. As soon as I graduated from high school, and now, you know, I was able to get them. My mom hates my tattoos. She tells me don't get another tattoo. She is 100% against my tattoos. But, you know, it was the basketball culture, for sure. I got a lot of my tattoos when I was in college. You know, my tattoos, Family First is one on my arm, you know, just things that I believe I got my city. I'm really passionate about the city of Chattanooga tattooed on me. I've got a tattoo of the Bible. So a lot of things that just kind of make me who I am, and the things that I stand for and believe in. That's kind of, you know, what all my I got a hustle tattoo somewhere, I think, on the back of my arm. So, you know, those are the reasons why I get tattoos. It's really just symbolism for the things that I believe in and I stand for. But if I didn't play basketball, I don't even know if I would ever even started getting tattoos. But they're really addictive, and so, you know, once you start, it's kind of hard to stop. But I love them, and you know times are changing from a cultural standpoint with work and things of that nature. It used to be, you know, you can't show any tattoos, yeah, or any of that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of culture in the workplaces are changing and shifting and that kind of stuff. So I think that's a cool thing to see.
Yeah. And so on your website, there's this quote that says, "Clearly, Mr. Chapman is a new voice eager to serve wake-up calls." Yeah. What does that mean to you?
Yeah. Who said that? I think that was Demetrius said that, right? You know, when he said that, I think I had just finished talking to a group of his young people back home. And
who is Demetrius?
I think if I remember, Demetrius works with like at-risk youth in Cleveland, Tennessee, right outside of Chattanooga. And you know, the wake-up calls piece is all about, you know, I believe if you give people exposure to opportunities, they'll respond. You can't strive for something that you don't know exists, right? And so, because I came from a place in Chattanooga where I didn't know a lot of opportunities existed. And then once I started to grow and realize the opportunities were out there and that kind of stuff, and I wanted to take advantage of every opportunity that was around me or as much as I possibly could, then I felt like it was my responsibility to pour that information back out to people and say, hey, like, there's opportunities out here. You don't have any excuse to not follow them. Now, you got to find them out. You got to seek them. But I'm here to tell you that they're there. And so I think that that's what he probably means by the wake up call piece, because I just feel like it's my responsibility to let people know that there are opportunities that are out there. You can make things happen for yourself. You can, you know, because if you know that there's an opportunity that's out there, then you're going to go after it. You know, a lot of people quit because they don't see a way. But if somebody shows them a way, then a lot of times they will go after it. And I've taken the responsibility to do that as much as I possibly can.
Okay.
Speaking of wake up calls.
Yeah, right. Hello, Mr. Chapman. This is your 9 a.m. wake up call.
That's right.
All right. So on that note, on that topic, about wake up calls, yeah. You know, you mentioned that the sheer fact that you didn't know about certain opportunities, yeah. It kind of just takes you out of the running.
It
right?
does.
And that's the truth with a lot of people, mm-hmm. right? That's the truth for me. Like, I am an immigrant, moved to Detroit when we first came here, and then we moved to Metro Detroit.
Yeah.
But even there, it was still like you had to actively seek. And even when you did, like, the people you would talk to didn't even know about all the opportunities there too, right?
Word.
And so with what you're doing with Quicken and the community investment mm-hmm. team, can you talk a bit about the approach with, you know, the neighborhoods? And,
yeah.
you know, I mean, there's a lot of people say there's a lot of, like, disconnect, and I believe that's true
yeah.
To a certain extent, right? But at the same time, you know, like, what can be improved to show the citizens yeah. of the neighborhoods, the residents in the neighborhoods, like, what opportunities are out there?
Yeah. I mean, I just think that, you know, there's a lot of work that's obviously being done by the entire family of companies in the city of Detroit. And, you know, a lot of times people just don't get aware of those opportunities for a lot of reasons. And I don't think Detroit is unique to that. I just think that, you know, it takes people who the people in the community relate to be able to hear those messages. Because a lot of times you may hear a message or you know, you may be getting a message out about something so somebody can take advantage of it and things of that nature. But people have got to trust it too, and they've got to trust the source that it comes from, and they've got to be familiar with that source. And if you're not as familiar with something, then you're not really going to trust it. And sometimes those things take time. And I will say that, you know, the FOC has done a really good job with just being very patient. You know, this thing happens very fast. You know, all of the things that are happening in Detroit and all of the investments that are happening and things of that nature. But there's also got to be a bit of patience there with, you know, just knowing that not everybody's going to be able to buy in, you know, in the very beginning. Not everybody's going to be able to hear about every opportunity in the very beginning and things of that nature, and stuff just kind of takes time. And so kind of going back to when I was talking about the co-working space and you know, creating uncommon collisions and things of that nature, it's all just about intentionality. And so as long as, you know, the FOC or anybody in Detroit that's doing great things that people can gravitate to, you know, if you're being intentional, then it eventually it's going to happen. You know, you'll get to that place where, you know, the majority of the people within the communities and things of that nature, you know about what's going on and feel like they have at least a say in what's going on, or at least a way to get involved in something that's going on. So it's just got to be a bit of patience there.
Yeah, definitely. And so I was on your Twitter
yeah.
and scrolling through your feed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, like, self-motivation, like, you're just trying to be the best you that you can be.
That's
every
right.
day, trying to be the best version of yourself.
That's right.
You know, I deploy a lot of that same, like, philosophy and mentality in my life as well. And I think, you know, it's important for everybody to do that.
Yeah.
How do you think, how should other people approach their own journeys and their own paths?
Yeah. It's so funny that you bring that piece up, because you know, that's the most important piece to me, really. If I can wake up every day and say, all right, I'm going to be the best version of myself today, then I'm going to look you know, look up 5 years later and I'm going to have a lot of growth just because every day I challenge myself. I never like to get complacent. I never like to be satisfied regardless of what it is that I achieve. Because I know that there's more to do, and there's always going to be more to do until the day that I die. And I want to make sure, you know, whatever day it is that I leave this earth, that I leave a legacy of growth, of helping people, of achieving things that I set out to do. And I can only do that by trying to be the best version of myself every day. You know, I published a book called Hashtag The Hustle, and it's through Twitter. It's all tweets. When I was starting my first business, you know, I was tweeting a lot, and I was tweeting to really motivate myself. And then other people were telling me that they were writing down my tweets and that kind of stuff. I was like, well, I'm about to monetize this. Right. I'm putting my Twitter archive and publish it into a book of just kind of quotes and that kind of thing, motivational quotes. And so, you know, I really believe in that. I really believe in self-awareness, and I believe in self-encouragement. You know, I have a ton of flaws, and I try to realize what those flaws are, and I try to surround myself with people that can complement my flaws, and I really try to make myself the best me that I can possibly be with my strengths. And that's something I learned from Gary. You know, I follow some of Gary's stuff, and you know, he's always talking about, you know, just doubling down on your strengths and that kind of stuff, and I believe in that. And so I just really think that if we can be intentional about being the best version of ourselves, man, you know, there's no limit to what we can achieve.
For sure. And before I ask my last question, sure, here, where can these listeners reach you?
Yeah, so you can reach me at iwrotethehustle.com. It's my website. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram. It's just at iwrotethehustle. And I'll, you know, I follow folks back. You know, I don't care if they're strangers or whatever, especially if they tweet me or comment to me or something like that. I'll be sure to follow back. And if they want to email me, it's info@iwrotethehustle.com.
For sure. Thank you for that.
Yeah, for sure.
And so last question here, you know, whether you stay in Detroit, finish your career here, or move somewhere else,
sure,
what is the impact you want to leave on Detroit?
On Detroit specifically, I just want to leave, you know, whenever my time is up in Detroit, whenever that may be, I want people to say, man, he created opportunities for people, or, you know, he positioned people to be in a better place than where they were, especially around entrepreneurship than they started. I think that's the biggest thing that I want people to say about the work that I put in, the work that I do in Detroit, is, you know, just creating opportunities for people. And I try to listen a lot, and I try to, you know, provide strategy inspire strategy through the FOC based on the things that I'm hearing out in the community from these entrepreneurs that are in the space. And so, you know, that's the biggest thing. Whatever that looks like, I just want to move the needle on people having more opportunities.
For sure. Yeah. And with, I want to thank you.
Yeah, for sure, man. It was fun.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. That was James Chapman with the Quicken Loans Community Investment Fund. We hope you had a great time listening, and we'll see you next time on the Impact Michigan podcast.